This is Peter Tubbs, one of the producers for Market to Market. The following is our Market Plus podcast, which is one of two digital-only segments done by us. What you're about to hear is audio from a video discussion we hold in studio following the taping of our regularly scheduled program. If you want to see the faces say these words, visit our website, markettomarket.org, or on our YouTube page of Market to Market. We also have the M2M podcast, which publishes on Tuesdays. This one is a look at the behind-the-scenes work with our stories, as well as conversations with folks involved in agriculture in one of many forms. Now, here's Delaney Howell.
This is the Friday, November 1st, 2019 version of the Market Plus segment. Joining us once again is Sean Hackett. Sean, welcome back to the table.
Always great to talk agriculture.
That it is, Sean. And I know you're from Florida, so you don't have to experience these wet and rainy and snowy conditions that we've been seeing. But we've had a lot of inclement weather this week, pushing harvest back even further. We've got a question here from Gary in Wilton, Iowa, wanting to know, when do you expect the market to respond to the weather and yields of 2019?
Well, we talked about this in the main program that, you know, the corn market's already rallied 45, even 50 cents off of the lows. Has it not already factored in some of these things? I mean, that's a pretty good rally off the lows. The way we look at it, if you believe the 2 billion, 1.9 billion bushel carryout that the USDA said in their last report, where would corn be right now if weather was good and we had good harvest? 330 corn? 340 corn? So it's quite a premium in there. And so I'm not sure we haven't already priced a lot of this in. You know, maybe not all of it, But I'm of the opinion that we don't really have much more to do to price in the weather, you know, the delayed planting, the delayed harvesting part. We might have more room to price in lower yields should they come in, but I don't think the delayed harvest needs to be priced in any more than it already has.
And you're mentioning that for the corn market, but we also had a question wanting to know basically the same, why didn't we price in weather, coming from Eric in Custer, Ohio. Why aren't we pricing in the same thing here in the soybean market?
Well, I mean, the soybean market, you know, pushing 935, 950, I mean, that's up a lot from where it was just a few months back. So I would argue once again that we probably priced a lot of that in. It's always hard to know how much is trade, how much is weather, how much is ending stocks coming down. But, you know, we've had some pretty credible rallies to really important resistance levels to get over that hump. Like we talked about in the main program, I don't see delayed harvest being the story that's going to make that happen. It's got to be something else.
Can you give me an example of what that something else might be?
South American weather would certainly do it. The USDA is saying corn, even, you know, corn yields or soybean yields are down quite a bit more than what everybody suspects. You know, bringing down harvested acres in corn, anything like that that really takes the crop production expectations down more than we've been seeing would definitely do it. I don't think delayed harvest is that story. So,
what about the U.S. dollar, the weaker U.S. dollar? Could that be a story that helps out the grain markets?
It's always a story that can help out the grain markets. When we look at through the greatest, most prosperous times in U.S. ag history, it's been during weak dollar environments, the 1970s, the 2000s. And we've been dealing with a strong dollar, as you know, for quite some time. But we believe that we have turned this U.S. dollar down and made sort of what we call a 2 to 3 year top. And we did something on what we call the broad dollar index, which is an index of the U.S. dollar against a broad array of currencies, not just the euro and the yen. And we did what's called a breakout to the upside above the 2002 highs, reversal down sell. So, I mean, we failed to break out and we then closed back down. We had a weekly and monthly close this particular month. We think that could be the trigger and the sell signal that we are in for an extended bear market environment. And I have to tell you, we want exports to get going. That's your recipe for getting any trade deal. You really, really need a weak dollar to get that going and to help translate better prices for U.S. So we're really excited that not only if we get weather volatility continuing around the world, which we think, but if you get also a weak dollar kicking in, boy, we could have an exciting 2 to 3 years coming up. And so we're very optimistic those two things coming together like milk could be the perfect storm for grain markets that we've been waiting for years. So
waiting for years. Sean, then I want to ask, turning to the global or the general economy in the U.S. as a whole, what does that weaker dollar do for the rest of us?
A weak dollar always is good for the U.S. economy. And anytime we can sell more to the rest of the world and buy less, that effect always improves gross domestic product. So you know, a strong dollar has been hurting us. It's been slowing us down. We've had good numbers. The numbers have been fine, but it's more been a domestic-related surge from tax cuts, from other things that the President Trump and his administration have been doing. But if we want to get a second wave, a second renaissance of the economy, it's going to have to be more export driven. And a weak dollar would absolutely be the recipe that we would be looking for to carry that forward. And that's always good for commodity markets.
I've asked most of the analysts this, and I'm going to ask you as well, give you the chance to answer it. But looking at interest rates, we saw the Fed cut it again this week. Does that indicate to you that we are turning to potentially heading into a recession here?
It's mixed right now. Our purchasing managers is in a recession, but we get numbers from jobs and from the service sector that says we're not in a recession. So we're in a muddled economy. I mean, that's really what it is. It's muddled. It's not clear. But the Federal Reserve is afraid enough, concerned enough about what they're seeing, that they feel if they don't take enough preemptive action, we could go into a deep recession. So they're very aggressive turnaround, by the way, from quantitative tightening to quantitative easing for and lowering interest rates shows that they're on top of it and probably are going to hold off a deep recession that could have been the case had they been more reticent to do that. So,
okay. Sean, let's turn our attention back to the grain markets. We've got a question here from Ed in Chicago, Illinois, wanting to know why does the basis remain so strong at harvest this year?
I think it's a function of three things. Obviously, when you harvest is delayed, you have less supplies coming in and you have demand that still needs the product. And so that by nature means you're going to have a stronger basis. Farmers are so frustrated from this year, everything that could go wrong going wrong, and they're so frustrated the prices haven't been better that they thought would be, that many of them are deciding to put a lot of this in the bin and wait around for better prices next year. And I definitely get that. And so that's clearly, you know, a factor that's coming into play. And I would say that the third factor is the USDA came out in the last quarter of grain stocks of September, and we had the largest drop in quarterly grain stocks on that report ever for the September report, meaning they just couldn't find hundreds of millions of bushels of corn and almost 100 million bushels of soybeans. Usually those kinds of corrections on quarterly grain stocks report are because they messed up the past year's crop. They overestimated last year's crop. So it says to us that we may not have the 1.9 billion bushels of corn they say we do, and we may see further adjustments in quarterly grain stocks going forward. So we think there's something too that there's just not as much out there as the spreadsheets are telling us.
So you mentioned there that folks are holding their crop, and that makes me wonder what your thoughts are about the carry going on right now between DEIS 19 and DEIS 20 in the corn market. Should producers be looking already to make sales for next year? I mean, that seems crazy to think when this year's crop's still in the field.
Yeah, I mean, we only recommend, I mean, our ethos is we only recommend sales when our smart money insider's indicator gives us sell signals, and we stick to that discipline, and we really don't stay away from that, and we're not in a sell signal in corn, we're not in a sell signal in soybeans. We just, not that we wouldn't look out that far, but we would do it when we have a really solid sell signal like we had in July, in late June, July, when we were, you know, making recommendations for active sales. We just would hold off right now on doing too much in the deferred. There's just too much going on with South American weather, the fourth driest growing season thus far in 30 years. You know, there's just too much going on for us to want to get aggressive on that unless we have a really solid indication by insiders.
Sean, what are your smart money signals suggesting to you about boxed beef prices? I read this week that they were the highest since in the record of recording them, except for 2014, which was a good year for cattle folks.
Yes, it was. And as I said in the main, you know, the main program, amazingly, smart money remains bullish in the cattle market despite these high prices and this big rally. It's highly, highly unusual and anomalous for that to happen. Usually when you get a rally, you see proportional selling, and we're just not seeing it. And so it really, we've been warning in our reports about this, that this is, says that this rally is something different going on in this rally than your normal garden variety, seasonal trade, or that sort of thing. And so until they get aggressive selling, and we looked at today's commitment of traders report and kind of eyeballed it, we did not see any big selling going on. This market has higher prices to go. So despite the numbers saying we should get skittish, you know, our discipline says we stick it out until they give us a clear signal. They know better than anybody else.
You said there that it was a different rally than normal seasonals and other things. What makes this rally different than others?
We think the difference is that this Tyson fire caused a shock in the system that ought not to have happened, meaning that was not supposed to happen. That crash and burn, that whole thing that took place, really set this market sideways. It was already a pretty constructive market, and because of that overreaction to the downside, for every action, there's an equal and opposite reaction. We're getting that springboard effect just as, you know, we're getting better with trade with Japan, with China, with our domestic demand is strong. The packer margins are still fantastic despite this rally. So it's a kind of a like we talked about earlier, it's a perfect storm for cattle, and everything that could go right is going right. And we don't see those winds changing until post first quarter of 2020. That's when we think the clouds could get more stormy, but we're very bullish continuing into the first quarter. And so as much as the temptation is that we got to have a top, it's got to, you know, and of course we could have setbacks along the way, but we are not that bearish at all. In fact, we're still bullish this market despite it all.
Is that the same then when you look at the feeder charts? I mean, on the chart, there is a huge gap around the 147 mark. Are we going to test that and fill in that gap?
I think we're absolutely going to be doing that. I think we'll probably do that and more. You know, I mean, I don't, you know, it's hard to know how far we're going to go in something like this because there's a lot of factors that are really unusual going on. And but, you know, there's absolutely no doubt in our mind we're going to fill that gap. And we think we could probably test last year's highs before it's all said and done on the feeder cattle market. We don't see any reason why last year, which was not as bullish as this year, should be any different. And if the dollar, you know, weakens and we get some currency inflation under our belt, absolutely. I mean, it's one of our favorite bullish markets right now is the cattle space.
Is there any other markets that you're extremely bullish about at this point?
That we're extremely bullish about? I would say right now, you know, the cattle market's probably the only one that our indicators are giving us the green light on. Everything else is not really giving flashing big signals right now. It's not necessarily bearish, but not like cattle. I mean, it's for what we do, that's our wheelhouse. You know, that's right in our wheelhouse for what we like to be pounding the table on. Everything else is sort of in murky middle ground right now, and that'll clear up, but we just don't have anything else we feel that comfortable with right now.
Okay. Sean Hackett, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Join us again next week when we'll see how one agent spent 3 decades investigating ag-related crimes, and Naomi Bloom will join us at the market-to-market table. Until then, thanks for watching, listening, or reading. I'm Delaney Howell. Have a great week.